All right, good morning to everybody. We're just about to start today's class, continuing Kohelet's, we're in second chapter, about verse 12. We went through to about verse 17 last week, but we should go with some fine points now. And we'll start just in about a minute or two. We'll just wait for friends to call in, and then we'll start today. Good morning, Doug. Cal.
Good morning, Rabbi. How are you?
Good.
Good morning.
Good morning, Cal. How you been?
On the phone. Rivka and Lisa, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Morning, Rabbi.
Good morning.
Good morning,
hey,
Rabbi.
Good morning. Hear me.
Good morning.
Are we starting at 8:15? Are they starting regularly?
Yes, 8:15 or 11:15 Eastern. It's always been this time.
Daylight.
Oh, you're in Phoenix, and they don't change time zones.
But it's great. I thought I was going to be late, but I thought it was going to be at 7:45 for me. We don't change the time zones.
So it's 8:15 there?
Yeah, it's 8:15 now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you were starting at, was it starting at 8:45?
No, it's Rabbi Moskowitz's class starts at 9:45 Pacific, so it'll be 9:45 your time.
Oh, yeah, okay, good. Perfect.
Okay, so ready to go? Okay, so let's continue. let's continue. There's just one thing I wanted to just take up. Josh, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Josh had asked a question. We were talking last week about the miracle of the Ark. And the miracle was that although the Holy of Holies, which was the smaller of the two rooms in the temple, although that room was 20 cubits square, which is about 30 feet square, so when you put the ark in there, which was about, I don't know, 3 feet, not square, rectangular, but it had a width of about 3 feet or so, and when you put the ark in that room, it was put in the center. Now, you'd assume if something was, you know, had some width to it, so when you measured from, you know, let's say one side, if you had a cube in a room, and the room itself was already 20, let's use English measurement, it was 30 feet wide, wall to wall, north wall to south wall. Now, if you put something in the room that has some width to it, and then you measure from one of the sides of that object, let's say it's a box, so now, let's say the box is 1 foot square. All right, you have a cube. It's 1 foot by 1 foot by 1 foot. You put that box right in the middle of the room. And if you measure now from one of the sides of that box to the north wall, it should be less than 15 feet because the whole room itself is 30 feet. So if you put the box right in the middle, so now you're putting it right at the 15-foot point. But the box itself has width, so that has to diminish from the overall width of the room. But they found that there was no diminishment. No matter where they measured from that box in the middle of the room, they found it was 15 feet to all sides, as if it wasn't there. If you have a mute button, whoever has the child there, that'd be good. So the miracle was that there was no diminishment of space. All right, everybody follow so far?
I think so.
Okay. Again, it's simple that it's just simple math that if you have a certain amount of space in a room, and then you put something in that room that has to take up space. But they found that there was no usage of space. The box was there, the ark was there, but it didn't take up any space. So the question is why you needed to have this miracle. And we gave the reason, which I think is a nice idea, to show that it really didn't take up space. It's trying to show that that ark, which really housed God's tablets, which is really the God's wisdom, the Ten Commandments. So we want to have an idea expressed that this is not of this earth, that the knowledge is not of this earth, and we also have to have the more fundamental idea is that God is not in the temple. God doesn't take up any space. God is not measurable in any way. And since this is God, the wisdom of God, so we want to get the idea across, because you have to realize the reason for the temple was really, according to Sforno and others, it was a concession to man, because man had sinned after he thought that Moses was gone, when they miscounted his descent from Mount Sinai, and they thought he was now dead, so they were panicking, and they created the golden calf. They needed some form of religious expression. So that was an unbridled form, and it was idolatrous. But God recognized that they had this need, so he allowed the construction of the temple as a concession to that need for physical religious expression. But that was a very controlled environment where there was no allowance for any of man's emotions to seep out. Every single act in the temple was highly orchestrated and regulated in order to keep the emotions, the idolatrous emotions, at bay. But since this is now where people felt they're related to God, there is a danger that you'll think that God is here, especially since the Torah says the words, quote, you'll make for me a temple and I will dwell amongst you. So that sounds like God is among us physically. But of course, a person who's intelligent will understand that that has a different idea. It means that God will provide for us, that his providence will be related to us. But since this is the case, there has to be something to counter the notion that, oh, maybe God is here. So that's what we said, that the miracle was really at the point that this ark is really taking up no space. You really have to understand that God is not here. God is not in temple. So now moving on to Josh's question, we talked about how, on another occasion, how if something is impossible, so that has to be, I mean, if we read something which the rabbis say, like Og was an enemy of the Jews and he lifted up a mountain to drop on the Jews. Well, that's impossible. A person can grow to be tall, 7-8 feet tall, but you can't grow to the point that you are so strong that you can lift up a mountain. That's impossible. So therefore, that is to be taken metaphorically. So Josh's question was, well, if here, when they measured the ark to the wall of the Holy of Holies, and when they measure all around, they found that it didn't diminish at all. Isn't that an impossibility? And mustn't we take that as a metaphor then? Meaning, don't say literally that the ark took up no space. Say that it means some other idea. So it's a good question, because that's going on the principle that when something is impossible, then it must be construed as a metaphor. So, and Josh was not asking on the miracles of Egypt, which were where God brought the locusts in, the frogs, because that's not impossible. You can have a large gathering of locusts. It's not a problem. But it seems to be, according to this case with the ark, that how can you measure the room and it is one size, and then you put something in it, and you're measuring the space from that object to the wall, and it's as if it's not there. That seems to be a contradiction. I mean, locusts filling up Egypt is not a contradiction to anything. God just causes the wind to blow and blows all the locusts from all around. That's a very possible thing. It's just very, it's not going to happen naturally unless there's a miracle. So what do we say about this case with the ark? Is this to be taken metaphorically? Or is there a way that we can explain it just like the case of the locusts, where locusts are not taken metaphorically, they're taken as a quite literal miracle, because there's nothing which contradicts reality. I mean, something which is impossible, we don't attribute to God. We don't say that God can make a circle simultaneously a square. That's impossibility. But there's no impossibility about there being tons of locusts in a certain country. There's no possibility of the body of water now turning into blood. How it happened, we don't know. But it's not a contradiction in anything. But what about here? How can you say that on the one hand, we knew the room was a certain size, and the other hand, when we measure it, we're finding that our measurement is off? Is that a contradiction or not? And let's define contradiction as being there's two opposites coexisting, or two contrary truths coexisting. Just like a square being a circle, that you can't say that the same object is a square and a circle. That's a coexistence in the same form. Or to say that something is green and red at the same time. So that's it's a contradiction in terms of color. That's not contradicting shape. Color has nothing to do with shape. But you could have a contradiction there. You could say that something is both 100 pounds and 50 pounds at the same time. Is that a contradiction?
Yes, that's a contradiction.
Okay. So you'd say in the same case over here by the ark, this would be a contradiction, and then we'd have to take it metaphorically? Again, the principle is that we don't agree to impossibilities. That is not something which God wants and which God does. God wants man to see constant truths in the universe. So that's why God doesn't change any truths. There could be miracles, but there's no inherent contradictions.
Rabbi, what about when... I'm sorry, Rivka, go ahead.
No, that's it. I just want to say, a miracle makes the difference. If it's a miracle, it's a whole different story.
Right, but even a miracle is not a contradiction, though.
No, a miracle is a miracle, a contradiction is a contradiction. Two separate categories.
Okay.
Right? Isn't that true, Rabbi?
Right.
Okay. You're not allowed to pray for a contradiction miracle.
That's a good one.
So when God turned I think Joshua requested that the sundial go backwards,
that the sun stand still.
That's a miracle, but not a contradiction.
That it goes backward, or the sun stands still in the heavens.
Sun stood still. Okay.
Yeah, that's not a contradiction, because God, all you're doing over there is stopping a certain motion.
Right.
But there's no contradiction in anything. So that's not a problem.
So we never, I'm just spinning through my mental Rolodex here, we never have a miracle anywhere in the Torah that is a contradiction?
Not that I know of, no. It doesn't make sense either.
That's very interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
That's a nice distinction.
It is. It is interesting. And I mean, also we have to make another distinction, and that is that, you know, a man being big enough to raise a mountain, that is not, like, for example, you had dinosaurs, you had large creatures. So it's not a contradiction in that case, but that is something which is just out of the realm of human design, the way it is. Right? We never have any evidence. If there's no evidence for something, and then we see a story about a man that lifted up a mountain, well, that was never in existence, that human genetics could go that far. So that we also say is metaphor. So there would be so far two times where we would always resort to the explanation being a metaphor. And that'll be when something is it's a contradiction. So that it can't be can't take place physically. It must be an idea. Or the phenomena that we're witnessing, there's no basis to say so in the observable universe.
Rabbi, I'm sorry, I don't want to put you on the spot, but can you give us an example of a contradiction that was really just a metaphor? Can you cite one?
Right, let me think. Good question, let me think. Question is whether a contradiction would ever even be used.
Oh, may I? I'm just thinking, at the time that Bhatia extended her arm to reach for Moshe in the water, and her arm extended like Plastic Man, the toys we gave to kids, it was just, it extended beyond what it should have extended to. Was that was a metaphor? Was that a nest?
That was a metaphor.
Her arm...
That we say is a metaphor because there's no basis for the ability of a human being to do that. So that means something else.
Right. Okay. So would that be an example?
No, that wouldn't be an example of a contradiction. That would be an example of something which is naturally baseless. But there's no impossibility in an arm being longer. There is an impossibility. There is an impossibility of a square being a circle. That can't happen.
Okay.
So, Rabbi, okay, if we take that any contradiction is a metaphor, and anything that goes beyond, if I'm understanding what you were about to say, or what you were saying, that anything that is not a metaphor but goes beyond what we could imagine as human experience, like the arm extending out in the water, is also a metaphor, then wouldn't someone say that the miracle at the Red Sea was a metaphor? Because the idea that a wind comes along and opens up a channel between a sea and dries it out enough for people to walk across is a pretty big stretch.
Right. I hear you. Let me think about that one second.
Yeah, can you repeat that? Expression you just said, the suggestion?
Yeah, I was just saying if the idea that any time something goes beyond human, what we would normally presume to be human capability, like the stretching of the arm out
right.
to get Moses, if we say that's a metaphor, then what do we do about something like the miracle at the Red Sea, which also seems to be so beyond it's not a contradiction, but it's so beyond what we see in the laws of nature.
Right. The answer to that case is all those cases, it says that God employed it. So therefore, God is part of the situation. We know that he can suspend laws of nature, just like he created the world. It doesn't say that God was involved with his hand extending. That was something which the rabbis wrote. So there, when it says God did it, that's a miracle.
Right, okay.
But God is not involved with by his hand. God is not involved with Og lifting up a mountain, things of that nature. God was involved when Joshua prayed that the sun should stand still. There again, you see that the God is part of it. So then we understand that God can suspend the laws that he created. That's not a problem.
And in the Chumash it says, when Moshe Rabbeinu told the people, stand still and watch the hand of the Lord.
Exactly, right. That was by the Red Sea, right. Exactly.
Good.
But there even more, it's not just Moshe telling the people what's about to happen. It says that God blew a wind. When it actually took place, you see God is involved in the process.
The process, right.
And I'm just even wondering, though, back to our original... So that answers your question, Doug, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Now, the other question is like this, is that will we ever find a contradiction? So far, we've only discussed things which are extreme cases. But I think you have to revamp what I said. You'll never find contradiction. Because contradiction, by definition, is impossible. So the only thing that we have is cases which are beyond human experience. And God is not involved, then it has to be metaphor. So if it talks about a case where a man is so big he lifts up a mountain and God's not involved, metaphor. It talks about Batya's hand extending and God's not involved, metaphor. But if it says that God is involved and he created a certain number of events in Egypt, then that's not metaphor, that's literal.
What's the source for the story about the Ark and the Holy of Holies?
That's a Gemara, actually, the one that you were quoted to me. That was in Bava Basra 99A. Did you send me this week the question?
Oh.
It happened to be right there. You take a look at that page. But it was another source also. But the rabbis and the Gemara say it was a nace. Now, once they say, and that's what was my question, my response to Josh, is that once the rabbis call that a miracle, so now they're not allowing you to assume that that is a metaphor. That was my initial response to you, Josh, right?
Right.
Right, so if the rabbis are calling it a miracle, a nace, therefore they're removing it from the category of metaphor, and they're saying, because nace means a real physical occurrence. So evidently, we have to somehow explain how that's not a impossibility, though, in terms of nature. And you could just say that in terms of human comprehension, so the measurement was off. God didn't allow an exact measurement to be taken in order to indicate that in this room, which houses the wisdom of God, the tablets, so man's knowledge has to pale by comparison. How do you show that man's knowledge pales by comparison? That he can't comprehend how this is happening. He can't wrap his mind around what's going on here. How in one case it looks like it's this measurement, in another case, and when he measures it, see, the thing is also, it's not simultaneous. We said that any simultaneous contradiction is an impossibility. God doesn't do that in the universe. But here it's not simultaneous. He measured the room, and subsequent in time, there was a measurement from the ark to the wall. You could also say that even if two people are measuring it simultaneously, that there was an alteration of some sort.
How could there be an alteration?
I'm not sure how. Tell you the truth, I'm not sure how it worked. I mean, that's really what the whole miracle of that room was, that the priests, they couldn't understand how you measure it this way, it's one measurement. You measure it that way, it's another. But you do have precedence for this in the universe, and that was Einstein's theory of relativity, that time is not something which is constant, and time is really a measurement of change, a measurement of transition in the universe. Before there was anything physical, there was no such thing as time. Time is something which Maimonides says is a creation, but it doesn't exist alone. It has to. It's time is a measurement of change in the universe. Now, change happens at different speeds. So Einstein proved that places which have great acceleration or tremendous gravitational pull, time passes at a much slower rate. And you can have, in an adjacent galaxy, time passing at a different speed. And that's why they have... On the one hand, there's a book, Genesis and the Big Bang, by Gerald Schroeder, and he explains how you can have both measurements of 16 billion year old universe and Earth being 5,700 years old. And it happens in the same universe because time passes at different speeds. So if time can pass at different speeds, that means there's a different rate. So there can be an alteration of space, that one measurement will give you this length, and another measurement will give you a different length. So based on relativity...
But Earth would have to travel at the speed of light.
What's that?
You need something traveling at the speed of light.
For what?
You know, like, you have to have, like, the arc travel at the speed of light or something crazy like that. Or the person with a measuring tape.
Well, that could be one. I mean, I know that's true. They say that things contract in size as they approach the speed of light.
So, Rabbi, are you now shifting and saying that we don't really have contradictions, that distinction isn't valid?
I'm saying that we don't have contradictions, correct.
You know, they could be like maybe an optical illusion. Like, I don't understand it, but I was reading about that there are scientists working on making like an invisibility cloak, like, you know, from Harry Potter. And they were going to use some material that with the light, I don't know, with the light does something funny and it looks like you could see through it or something.
Okay. That sounds interesting. Invisibility, I mean, that means matter is not going to have any reflective quality.
So I think that what you see on one side of the thing is going to be, the light is going to travel to the, I guess it's going to get travel to the other side and come through the other side, so it looks like it's invisible.
Uh-huh. It won't reflect.
I don't know. You have an optical, you can have something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Let me just address, Joel is writing on screen. He wants to know, is metaphor like exaggeration? Yes, Joel, it is. And Joel is also adding that speed of light is an infinitely small beam, okay? You have more knowledge of me than that, then. And that's well-versed. But, again, just relying on the rabbis regarding the Ark, if they're saying it was a miracle that this took place, that the measurements were off, so they're saying something was capable of happening, meaning two measurements are not contradictions. How? I don't know. Because typically when you say that if you have something simultaneous and it's different, like a square also being a circle, so that's an impossibility. That can't happen. Another impossibility would be that if a person can build a house before he was created, well, the person's not created yet, see, there's nothing to do with the act of building the house.
So does that bring us back around to the question then of, is this metaphorical or is it literal?
They're saying it's literal. Nais means literal. So when the rabbis say that the measurement from you know, two different measurements were taken and they were they were contradicting each other, saying somehow it was through a miracle here. The question is, though, how is it not a contradiction? How can it be that you'd have measurement of the room being 30 feet from wall to wall, and then the measurement from one of the walls of the ark is going to be 15 feet as if it's not even there?
Yeah, but why, if you're going to say that we know we should take it as literal, then why can't it be a contradiction?
Because a contradiction, as far as I understand the word to mean, is that it's impossible. It's not something which God does. It's not something which is able to be done. Because again, the whole point of God creating man and then creating the universe, well, one of the certain point of God creating man and giving him intellect is that he can perceive ideas. And ideas, by definition, are constant. Truths, by definition, mean that they're constant. So Torah says one thing today, and then it changes, and says the opposite tomorrow, so that's not a truth. I'm not getting accurate knowledge of what God is if the very principle that I learned yesterday is no longer in effect today. So what type of knowledge of something means it's constant.
Okay, and we've understood, I think, in our teaching over the years that God likes the law. So he used miracles very sparingly, which then raises the question of, okay, so why do we thing in the Holy of Holies? Because there's no, doesn't seem to be any burning need to do that. And we don't, I don't think, even sorted out what the purpose is or what people were supposed to learn from that.
Well, we said the purpose of that was that the nature of this wisdom, the tablets that are in the ark, they don't take up space. That means they are not of this world. It's the God's knowledge here. And also, it's complementing the idea that God doesn't take up space. Because there was the danger of, since God says, make a temple and I will dwell in it, there's a danger that people think that God's dwelling in temple. And since the voice emanated from that ark when Moses spoke with God, so that would even reinforce the concept that God has location in temple. So in order to remove that, there was no, their measurement was off. It was as if it didn't take up any space. It was there, yet it wasn't occupying space. They couldn't measure it. The object, the ark they saw, had a certain size and depth. That was a static size and depth. But when they saw that it was not occupying any space in the room, so that was to indicate this idea. That was the objective of that. So there really was a burning need. There wasn't a need in terms of escaping the Egyptians, and that's why God created the Red Sea, but it was a different need, that their concept of God should not be corporeal. It shouldn't be physical in any way. Somebody's mute button? Know me? Okay, so but now let's think about this for a second. I'm going to think and see if there is a way we can address this measurement and to show it not being contradiction.
You know, Rabbi, I can think of a couple ways you could do this as a miracle, just as far as making the measurements come out differently. I mean, it'd be a simple thing to say, like, shrink the measuring rod when you try to do the measurement, or, you know, when a person measures, you know, God could move the ark over 3/4 of a cubit, you know, each time somebody tries to measure, or something like that, and, you know, the measurement would always come out, you know, it could come out as 10 cubits then instead of whatever, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, it didn't say it moved.
And it wouldn't actually.
You'd have to have
the actual miracle that the ark had no measure, right? Is that actually?
Yeah, that's what the rabbi said. That the ark didn't have any measurement. That's what they used. It just means it didn't diminish space from that room.
Yeah. See, I wonder, you know, what would happen. You know, I guess I just picture, you know, if I was the guy doing the measuring here. Okay, you got the room, you got the ark in the center. So you take a tape measure and go along the one wall of the room. It's going to measure 20 cubits, right?
Right.
Then just slide that tape measure over until it touches the ark, and you'll be measuring, you know, the space on both sides of the ark plus whatever the width of the ark is, and you should be able to see right there, you know. You know what I'm saying? If there's some kind of width there.
Right. I don't know where in the nace was.
Yeah.
I mean,
it would be a contradiction if one person was to take a long tape measure and measure the whole thing, and together at the same time, the other person was going to put another tape measure over it on both sides and measure it. And that would be a contradiction, because you have two tape measures coming up with different measurements, and they're right on top of each other.
Right. That was what I was initially thinking, that if the measurements were done subsequently, then it's not a contradiction.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you're looking at two different things. What about if I say, if two people that are looking at a box, one person says it's red, the other one says it's green. So,
contradiction. That's
not a contradiction.
The way they see it.
Yeah, you can say that it's a perception issue. I'm not sure. I'm just thinking that maybe that's the very nature of this whole, the nature of this whole miracle was in order to show man that there's matters that are outside of his comprehension, so our very understanding of the nace is out of our comprehension. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is a very different type of a miracle. The whole purpose of making this miracle, I'm suggesting, is that the place which euphemistically God is speaking from, and the whole temple itself, which is the whole purpose, which was quote unquote, you'll make me a temple and I'll dwell in it. So this miracle was necessary to combat any notion that God is here. So he tries to show how the ark is not really taking up space. That God is not of this earth. When you say that it's not occupying space, you want to say something more. What's the difference with something occupies space? What's the real deeper lesson? The lesson is that this item which is associated with God is not of this earth. It's outside of it, and it's since measurement was the way God decided. See, sometimes God used locusts, sometimes God uses the sun. Here, the miracle was performed using the medium of measure. And measure means man's wisdom. So God, in this case, is the message is that man's wisdom is severely lacking. There is a great amount we can learn, but there's the far greater amount that we can't penetrate, and we have to accept that. That was the whole point of not going into this room. Anybody who walked into this room was killed, the Holy of Holies, because that's to show that you cannot approach God in this life. You cannot know what God is. That's what God said to Moses. Man cannot know me while you are alive. In this state, this earthly existence, you cannot know what God is. And if you think you can walk into the Holy of Holies as if you can approach God, so that concept is punishable with death. And the same thing happened when we said this once, when the Philistines returned the ark after they stole it from the Jews, and God was plaguing them because of that, so they sent it back. And when it hit the first town and the Jews saw it, they ran over to the ark and they opened it up and they looked inside, and God killed 57,000 people because those people too thought there was something you can see in terms of God. That's why they were looking in the ark. They thought that there was something tangible in the connection with God. If that's the notion that you have, then your whole existence is worthless. Then your whole idea of what God is completely corrupt. And you have a wrong idea. Your whole life is worthless if you think the Torah and everything you're doing in life, but God is this man in the sky with a beard. So then that's it. Your existence is worthless. So therefore God killed those people. There was no purpose in their existence if they thought God was physical. They completely missed the most fundamental truth of reality. So again,
Rabbi, as an aside, do we know why 57,000 died? Seems like a pretty big amount for the mistakes of a few.
Well, yeah, evidently there was a certain number of people in that location. And the rabbis go into that. Were they 7,000 people that were as great as 50,000 people? But they go into a whole analysis of what the 57,000. But the bottom line is that people were killed. Many people were killed. Because they attributed physicality to God. And you see, that's a very... So we have to completely abandon that thought. And maybe that's what the point is over here. This is a miracle which you can't comprehend. Somehow it was operating. But the point of the miracle was to show man you cannot comprehend God. How do you show that? With a miracle that you can't comprehend. So maybe we're not able to get to a real definition of how this miracle worked for this very reason. Different type of miracle.
Well, and a question I was going to raise is, in the little bit that I have read about quantum physics, there are some phenomena they can observe that clearly are contradictory. As I understand it, when they do certain experiments, a particular element will exhibit a look like a particle, and then it will look like a wave, and it depends on if someone's looking at it, how it appears, and so forth, things that seem normally contradictory to us. So is there any real difference between that in terms of its contradictionness and this?
No, because I believe what they say there is that in terms of quantum mechanics, it functions on a completely different set of laws than our level. So there are different laws operating at different subatomic levels.
Is it possible then that this is also operating in accordance with a set of systems and laws that we just are unable to comprehend at this time?
I don't know. I don't know, but I mean, I'll give you an example. For example, that Rabbi Chait had once given. At our level, we see a wooden table, and we cannot penetrate it. We put our finger on the table, we can't push our finger through the table. On the subatomic level, there is more space than there are particles of substance. So things function differently at different levels. If you were an atom, you'd be able to fly right through the table and with no problem, because there's more space between the particles than there is particles. But at our level, we can't. So nothing changed. It's just the different laws operate at different levels. And Laura is asking, so people actually saw a man in the sky with a beard. They may have imagined something. I'm not sure which medrash or metaphor you're referring to, Laura. Okay, Josh, you wanted to say something?
I didn't say anything.
Oh, okay. I thought somebody...
Was there like a miracle where everybody was together? Like the whole Jewish population was together in the Beit HaMikdash, and they all fit in the courtyard?
Yeah, that was another miracle too. There was also another spatial miracle that no matter how many people were there, it accommodated them. Could be similar to this. But just to be clear, the reason why contradictions are not part of the system, not part of God's system, is because that would completely corrupt the consistency that knowledge must have. Knowledge is, the physical world is really to present to us God's wisdom. And we study the physical world, the creation. It's amazing, but you can't have observable laws if they aren't repeated and if everything changes every day. So then you'll never get to you'll never arrive at any constant truth. Truth, by definition, is eternal. Any truth is really eternal. And that's because God is really the source of all knowledge, of all truth, and God doesn't change. I am God, I do not change. That is a verse in the prophets. Okay. But that's not really what I wanted to do today. I wanted to do Kohelis.
Nice try.
No, I'm serious.
It's fascinating.
I know. It's me. We get off on tangent.
And, no, this could
I'll take the blame for this one.
Yes. you'll be the fall guy. That's what they call him, right?
I never knew about the 57,000 people who died. I mean, I know there was a movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark, but I never knew this was reality.
Yeah, that's real. It really took
place. And I'm wondering where it's written.
It's in the beginning of Prophets. I'm not sure if it's...
The Prophets?
I think in Judges.
Judges.
Yeah, I think it's in Judges.
Fascinating.
Yeah, after Joshua, after the book of Joshua.
Uh-huh. Okay. I look for it. Thanks.
Rabbi, do you happen to recall if part of the reason that many people died is because of just the general principle that the nation of Israel tends to get judged as a group?
No, I think it's simple that that's how many people committed the crime.
Oh, I mean, they all came up and looked inside.
Yeah, they all participated in that sin.
Oh, okay. Seems like a lot of people to get in front of a small little container.
Yeah, maybe that's why you had the rabbis arguing on it not being that many people, but the 57,000 meant to equate 7,000 as being as great as 50,000 people. I mean, they were very great people, and nonetheless, they still sinned in this area. It's a very dangerous area, the religious emotion.
Yeah.
Right, you see people always going to the graves of dead people. They need some physicality, and they can't let go of man, or, you know, there's all these different expressions of not being able to relate to God abstractly. The infantile state is something which people just really have a tough time, releasing the grip. It just it's too strong.
Are they clear? Because I mean, we know that the tablets existed and that the people saw them because Moses brought them down. So if I were near the ark and I knew the tablets were in it, I might be curious to look in just to see the tablets, not because I thought God was dwelling there. So do we get that it was wrong for them to even want to do that, or that all of them had this wrong idea that somehow they would see God or something like that inside?
Yeah, well, looking at the tablets is sharing that idea. That's the same reason that God commanded Moses to rope off Mount Sinai before he created the whole miracle of Revelation, because he knew that the Jews would want to ascend. Why? Because they thought something could be visible in terms of this event. That was the danger, the same exact danger. So here, looking at the ark, just, it's not quote-unquote just to see the tablets. The tablets are what God gave, so you want to, why do I want to look at the tablets more than looking at the structure of the ark? The tablets are blue sapphire, and the ark was, these golden cherubs. So why was the tablets more of an interest for me to look at than the external form of the ark? Precisely because the tablets were something which were given by God. It had that element of divine nature to it. That's why they were looking at it. Meaning there was an underlying emotion that, yeah, there's something about God that I can see here.
Well, okay, wait, but you've got a whole generation there that saw those tablets. And the tablets were miraculous in themselves in that you could see the letters from either side.
Right.
So I don't see why it would be, if that generation saw them, why would it be sinful for a person in the next generation to want to see them?
Well, I mean, we do know, Maimonides, he talks about the nature of miracles, that if miracles happen continuously, then they lose their effect. We're only passively interested in sunrise as an aesthetic beauty, as opposed to, wow, look, there's a red ball of fire that's rising higher and higher in the sky. The person never says that. But if we never saw that before, let's say, for example, tomorrow morning, something was, you had the sun, and then all of a sudden we saw this blue cube rising up next to the sun tomorrow morning, right? Everybody would be awestruck. But what's the difference if it's a blue cube or a yellow sphere? It's only because we're conditioned, and that's what removes the effect. So the Jews who saw the tablets when Moses brought them down, after it became commonplace, these Jews evidently never saw them. So there was something very intriguing about that over other objects, which I think the sin was really that. I mean, you're right, it's the same thing. The tablets didn't change. But since those Jews were not conditioned to see it all the time, there was an element of divinity that was associated with it. Otherwise, there was no sin. But there have to be, the death can only be because, not because they wanted to look at some object, but because there was something about God they felt that can be seen. That's the same reason why the mountain was roped off before God created the revelation at Sinai. That the people should not express any notion that there is something physically here in connection with God. There can't be anything, something physically here. God isn't physical. He's not on the mountain. He's not anywhere. So the people that were looking at it, to answer your question, why are they any worse off than the Jews who saw it? Because the Jews who saw it, evidently that was how it was presented. That was in a God-ordained fashion that Moses should come down from the mountain with the tablets. And they were seen for a certain period of time, but then they were put into the ark. That was part of God's design. But now, once it was made off limits, if there was that expression, so now it became something which was corrupt. Meaning the very same action, you have precedent for this. It used to be permissible in the days of the patriarchs to make monuments, and they'd put oil on top, and it would be a way of praising God, that God had a vision at this location, and I'm going to somehow make a praise to God by standing up a monument that should show that this is a location where I experienced certain knowledge. And they would anoint it. But once the idolaters started using it for idolatry, so God said those very same monuments are now prohibited. So here too, not exactly the same, but in one instance, the viewing of the tablets could be permissible, but in a certain subsequent state, it could be off limits, and it would be a demonstration, be a violation of anthropomorphism. Like Joel is saying, sin is an attempt to approach God too soon in time or too close in space. Well, that's not accurate. Sin means going against God's word. That's what sin is. To approach God too soon is not possible. A person can't speed that up. And too close in space is not accurate because it's never in space at all. There's never any relationship spatially with God. All right, Joel, I hope that's clear. So that's not an accurate statement. Now let's get back, let's come full circle now. So in terms of contradiction, in terms of a square being a circle, never going to happen. Not in miracle. Again, so I'm rejecting what I originally said, it was incorrect. What you will have is the rabbis making statements of extreme cases. And since it's so extreme, and it doesn't say God did it, like Basia's hand, the Paro's daughter, her hand extending out. So they use that to teach a deeper idea. But since it doesn't say God did it, we don't say. But if God writes in the Torah that he brought this plague, or he brought that plague, or he did this miracle, so then it's saying clearly that God did it. That's not to be taken metaphorically. That is real. But if it doesn't say that, then it says that the rabbis write something that Og lifted up a mountain, and it doesn't say a word about God doing it, so then we say that's an impossibility. It's not something which the universe substantiates. We don't see anything which can substantiate that in the universe. But in terms of something which is a square and also at the circle at the same time, that we will not have. It will not be found in existence.
So in the case of the
it's also impossible to even perceive that. It's impossible to perceive something simultaneously as two opposite shapes. That's another reason why it's impossible. It's just not perceptible. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Doug.
Well, and then in the case of, if we say that if God, it says that God did it, it's literal, and if it doesn't, then it's metaphorical, then where does that leave us with regard to the Holy of Holies situation?
The rabbis say it was a miracle. They say it was God. That's what nace means. That would be the same case as if it says that God brought an east wind and blew the locusts onto Egypt, or blew open the Red Sea. But you have most of the case.
It also seems consistent with the way that the tablets were, where you could see the letters from both sides.
Yes.
Is it possible that that type of miracle is one that kind of just occurs, it's like almost illusionary, like it just it would occur in the mind of the person doing the measuring?
That's also possible. But when they say nace, when they say miracle, a miracle usually means a suspension of physical law, not an illusion, not a miscomprehension.
Could there be, you know, it'd be a suspension of, the way the, the normal design of the human being, how the mind works, it'd be a suspension of that.
But that's
not called natural law necessarily, but
that borders on like God fooling man, because he's not going to attribute to that. Why should all of a sudden my mind not be comprehending? That would be attributing the miracle to the wrong thing and saying that God's really not in control of the universe. And so I wouldn't go that angle. Again, I think...
Yeah, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, I think that this case is
Rabbi,
really...
Rabbi, could I say something, please?
Yeah.
I'm looking in the dictionary. Miracle is an extraordinary event manifesting a supernatural work of God, an unusual event. So it's supernatural. It's something out of the ordinary. That would be a miracle. That's something that only Hashem could do, right? That's a miracle. Whereas in the dictionary, it also says a contradiction would be a denial of the truth. So now I'm thinking to the Masorah issue this week, where the box was created, the figure in the front page. It could be, it was impossible. It couldn't be that way. The bars couldn't be connected the way they appeared to be connected. That was impossible. And that was a beautiful picture to explain exactly what a contradiction is, I think.
Yes.
Would that work? Would that help?
Yes.
To clarify it? Because
yes.
For me.
Yes, a miracle is...
I mean, a box. The boards could not be connected in any way, could not look, could never appear the way they appeared in the photo that you put in the Jewish Times. No, it's not on the front page. It's in the article. It's,
yeah, you're correct. A miracle is a suspension of natural law, since God controls law.
Yeah.
So they're only functioning a certain way because he is... sustaining the properties of that law, but he can always alter those, although the rabbis say that God does not, quote-unquote, like to do miracles. The reason why is because then it suspends the very laws that God wants us to study. So a miracle is not really God's objective, because then it's suspending the ability for man to study something on a regular basis, whereas a contradiction is something he never does, because it just... The universe can't tolerate it. It just can't exist. You can't have...
Okay.
A person can't build a house if he wasn't born yet. That's a contradiction. It's an impossibility. Impossibility. That can't be done... A miracle... Let me put it this way. That can't be done via a miracle. All right? A miracle also can't change history. If I did something yesterday, that's it. It's over with. A miracle can't change history.
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's clear.
Right, any other questions, comments, anybody?
I think it's a good point, you know, what you said about this is not a simultaneous contradiction, because it seems to be that the Ark having measure and not having measure at the same time. It's that you, it seems to be a difference in time there between the measurings, which wouldn't make it a direct contradiction. Is that correct?
Yeah, but that's the only thing. I'm supposing that the measurement was subsequent. You know, measurement A was before
right.
measurement B. That's only my supposition.
Okay.
But I think we still have to be firm. You know, there's no way out of it. I mean, impossibility is, by definition, that means they cannot exist. It's not something which...
Right.
Which, you know, to say that God can't do it is not a wrong statement. It's not... People think that, you know, if you limit God, and you say, well, there's something that God can't do, all of a sudden that's blasphemy. Not true. And the example I always give is if you, let's say you have a judge, and he can't ever make a wrong decision. He always finds out who's innocent, he always finds out who's guilty. Always. So, and he's limited, right? Because he can't deviate. He could never make a mistake. So, not being able to make a mistake is a limitation. But that type of limitation is a perfecting quality. So if we say that God can't do something, he cannot afflict a person who didn't deserve it, or God cannot make a square or a circle simultaneously, or God cannot have a person building a house before he's created, all those things are really perfections. So we shouldn't look at that. As limitation does not mean imperfection. Sometimes limitation really is a perfection. It's an important idea. It's an important concept.
So would that be like is it,
Yeah, what was that?
Yeah, I was just going to say that God can't create another being exactly like himself.
Right. Because exactly like himself would mean that he's going to create something which is the sole cause of the universe. But God already is the sole cause of the universe.
Also, but he's not created.
Yeah, and also he's not created. And if God would create another being like him.
Right.
Very good, Naomi. Doug, you had a question?
No, I was going to say, if I understood what you were saying right, it would be like, God cannot get a cold or the flu, and that we could say, well, that's a limitation, but that's a limitation that is, how did you put it?
Perfecting.
A perfection, yeah.
God cannot be ignorant of anything. But that's a maturing. A person has to mature from their concept of the Superman emotion. Like, you know, Superman, he could do anything he wants. He could even kill himself. You know, they'd have to say that. That's part of anything. But the person has to realize that saying that God can do anything is really a flaw.
By the way, is that Genesis and the Big Bang a book that you would recommend?
Yes. Gerald Schroeder.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I just gave a copy to my father last week. And it's a very good book. He happened to have been by, so you know, I think about what else, you know. And I always keep extra copies of books in the house. I think are important books. So I happened to have had an extra copy of that that I bought maybe like a year ago. So he just happened to be here, and I said, oh, you know what? Take this and read it. I got to buy another copy for myself now. So I think that was my last copy. So it's something you have to read over a few times. All right, so maybe we'll wrap it up here, and I guess we'll pick up next week on the Koheles, which is we're going to go back to 2:12, because we went through it to about 2:17, 2:18, but we went through, we got the flow, and I think we got some basic concepts, but now I want to go through the specifics in the actual verses. There's a lot more to it. So we'll do that next week. All right, sounds good. Now, is anybody around? I'm just wondering, you know, Purim is Tuesday, and you know, we just moved the clocks ahead, so you know, those of us that are celebrating, so, you know, the meal is not going to start till maybe like, you know, 4 o'clock, 4:30, so we still have a whole day. We could, if you want, you know, go into some of the points of the Megillah, you know, and understand how this worked, and how, you know, a nice example of you know, how these two people, Mordechai and Esther, were able to use their wisdom and to, you know, with God's help, of course, create the salvation for the Jews. So I'm wondering if Tuesday afternoon is feasible or not. You tell me. I know it's midweek and pretty much most people are working. But actually, in Jewish, you know, according to the Torah, that's not supposed to be a day for work. There's no prohibition, I think. So is that a possibility? Do people want to, any of you want to convene here online on Tuesday or on the phone?
I can set it up.
Sounds like a good idea.
Anybody that can't make it?
Do you have your time, Rabbi?
I probably wouldn't be able to make it. My wife, that she might.
All right.
I probably won't, but Cal probably can.
Right. All right, so let's tentatively say, Will, I'll send an email out for the time. I would guess it would be somewhere, like New York time, maybe like 1:30, 1 o'clock, somewhere around then. And Laura may not be able to make it, and Joel in North Carolina says yes, he can make it. Okay. Well, you know, it'll be recorded anyway. So this way, in case, you know, you're not going to miss anything if you can't hear it live. But I'll confirm it by email sometime, maybe tomorrow. All right.
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right, but Sunday we're on anyway, regular time.
Okay. Thank
you. Thank you so much, Rabbi.
Okay.
Rabbi.
Thank you.
Have a good day, everybody.
Thank you, too.
You, too.